I said I was ready to leave.
All right, so we will hear from you, Mr. Broussard, representing the plaintiff in this case.
Judge Jones, Judge Albert. This is one of a plethora of racial discrimination cases that have come before you on motions for summary judgment that were granted. The only difference is when Judge Trimble decided this case, the Supreme Court had not come out with the Tolan versus Cotton case where they
didn't like that opinion of ours, did they?
where they sort of amplified the Reeves case that Judge Ginsburg had written, and then in the Thomas versus Nugent case, they per curiam reversed this court and sent it back, citing the Tolan case.
You know, you may have a good case, but I don't think those cases have a darn thing to do with them. They're both qualified immunity. And this is inferences of racial discrimination, and we have a huge body of law on that that stands alone. So, you know, I think you create more confusion than clarity by citing those cases.
Well, I know, but it doesn't hurt to remind us. I mean,
Your Honor, I think the Tolan case, and I'm citing those. Not
okay, well, tell us how.
We know what those are. Okay,
just tell us how that relates to this case.
Yeah,
that's what I'm trying to answer, Judge Jones. I'm talking about procedurally, about how you view the evidence on a motion for summary judgment. Do you, the statements, and I've outlined them right here.
Okay, tell us why this case should go to the jury. Just tell us that.
Well, this case goes to the jury because the judge ignored and discounted the testimony that was the plaintiff put forth in this matter.
Wait, I mean, I didn't see the evidence that you're talking about. In other words, obviously the community is racially divided. And obviously the blacks voted for the blacks, the whites voted for the whites.
Right.
And your evidence is that there was one woman that convinced by her remarks that the county or parish was not ready for a minority. You're hinging it on that she influenced through, I guess, some sort of demagoguery to influence these other individual voters. I mean, it is built upon speculation, upon speculation,
well,
upon speculation.
That's a little myopic, Judge.
It's
a little myopic, I believe.
Okay, well, tell me why it's myopic.
Because you're saying one woman, but you're not looking at who the woman was. The woman was the chairman of the Personnel and Selection Committee for the school board. She controlled. She screened all the applicants.
Tell me the evidence that she controlled the votes of independent.
The testimony of the other board members is in the record, Your Honor.
Well, tell me what they said. I didn't see what you said.
They said that she said she sent letters screening the applicants and saying that she was in charge, the board president, which she wasn't. She also.
But she wasn't. But
they set the deadline, Judge. They set the deadline for March 18th. My client was diligent, along with nine other people, and submitted their applications on time. She set the date of April 9th to interview those clients. Then, in the interim, she tells at a committee meeting. She tells these board members, "I don't think the community is ready for a minority superintendent." And then she goes and tells another board member, and then at an arts council or something, she says, "You can rest assured a man of color is not going to be appointed superintendent." And that's all in the record, Judge.
Well, I understand that. I mean, but this is one person, and you say, well, I mean, she had all this. She may have.
Well,
that's kind of an intangible thing.
Well, that's
and what you're assuming is all these other people are just simply ciphers.
Well, that's
and that she, it was a one-person board that can control everything. I just don't.
That's a jury issue, Judge.
That is not a jury issue. That is not. That is speculation. But go ahead. I'm not going to interfere with you anymore.
You're assuming the jury's role, and that's what the Tolan case said you can't do. You've got to believe the evidence that the plaintiff submits. I can read you the quote, Judge.
I have a question for you. Why did you concede that there's no direct evidence of discrimination when you have this alleged statement by Ms. Hildebrand that she didn't think the community was ready for a black superintendent. So why would that not be direct evidence as opposed to circumstantial?
Well, I agree, Your Honor, that it was, it could be taken as direct evidence.
Why did you concede that there was no direct evidence? Did you not concede that? You haven't argued this.
I said that in my brief. I said that, Your Honor, because I was using the McDonnell Douglas deal where they stipulated my client made the prima facie case, and then they didn't submit, in my opinion, any sufficient evidence to rebut the presumption of discrimination, which Judge Ginsburg says in Reeves, if you do the prima facie and they don't have any evidence against it, that you're home free. Now, I didn't see any evidence against it in this case. I mean, you can't point it. But I want to quote, Your Honor, it says here, the evidence of the non-mover is to be believed and all justifiable inferences are to be drawn in his favor. That's out of the Tolan case. Also in Tolan, they said—
out of the Tolan case. That is a, you know, that is a principle that has been there forever.
He also says, we must take care not to define a case's context in a manner that imports genuinely disputed factual propositions.
That has been the law. That's not new law.
Judge, the point is, the court hasn't been, and in this case, the court didn't apply that.
Okay. You can argue
that's the point we're trying to make.
Right, you get right to what Judge Jones says. What has Tolan got to do with it other than to state aged principles of law and apply them to the particular facts of that case?
Let me point out a couple of things, Judge. We do not contest the qualifications of the appointee. He had a PhD. He was a member in 8 years as the superintendent in Winfield, and they went out and recruited him afterwards. We don't contest that.
Yes,
well, our point, Judge, is that we say that—
Let me say something. And what is it your theory in this case that the discrimination was in opening it up again?
Yes, without voting.
No.
Without interviewing or voting on the applicants and reopening.
You need to learn how to argue in the Fifth Circuit. You need to learn how to argue in the Fifth Circuit.
I don't know how to argue in the Fifth Circuit. I've been doing it 40 years, Judge.
Well,
I clerked for Judge Herbert Christenberry for 3 years. I think I know a little bit about federal court. Go ahead and tell me, though.
No, I'm just telling you that whenever you argue in the Fifth Circuit, you need to listen to the judges instead of interrupting. We're the ones that decide the case, and we ask questions. We like to have answers. We don't like to continue to rumble on. Now, with that,
Judge,
I've said—
I appreciate the reciprocal. When I'm making a statement, you interrupt me. You don't let me make my statement. I mean, is it reciprocal or not?
Well, go take a lesson on how to argue in the Fifth Circuit.
Anyway, Judge, we're saying this. It was the process and the procedure of reopening the applicants, to take in new applicants without voting on or even interviewing the applicants they had. And our client is saying that it was skewed against African Americans because he thought he had a decent chance of getting it the first time. Now, as I read Title VII, it says that you cannot use race as a factor in hiring individuals.
No kidding.
Beg pardon?
No kidding.
Yeah. And therefore, the evidence in this case shows that the woman, and I'm sort of relying on Judge Jones's case in the Dupree versus Sanders case, where her and Judge Higginbottom wrote an opinion, which was cert was denied, dealing with the cat's paw. The question is Ms. Hildebrand the cat's paw for the school board in this matter? Did she have sufficient control? Or was she the primary thing? That is a jury question, and we think the jury's entitled to hear that issue. That's all we're asking for, is to let it go to the jury.
Finally, you got around to an important point of law, and that is what's going to save you here, or get you to the jury, is the cat's paw theory. And that's the first time you've even mentioned it.
I see my brief, Judge, in reply.
I'm talking about in your argument here. You've been so... Anyway, go ahead.
You know, I have to say this is a district court judge. It has these hearings in court almost every day. Honestly, I think you're being disrespectful to Judge Jolly, not that he needs a lawyer. But, you know, our job, and I can tell you sitting here, is to go ahead and focus in on certain issues that you may not know we need to focus in on, but we're going to write the opinion. So why you'd be antagonistic with and say, well, you interrupt me, Judge Jolly, I mean, why would you say that when he's trying to help by getting to the issue? I mean, it seems to me you should be more respectful than that, because I wouldn't put up with it in my courtroom, with all respect.
I apologize to you, Judge. I'm very sorry. I was making a statement, and you interrupted. I'm sorry. Maybe my statement was irrelevant, and to that extent, Judge Alford, I appreciate you pointing that out to me.
You have no problem with me.
One of the things that Judge Trimble did in this case, I thought he discounted or ignored or trivialized the statement made by Ms. Hildebrand. He said, assuming that there's discriminatory animus, like Judge Alford pointed out, I think if you go to a jury and the woman says that in front of a jury, as far as her motive, I mean, that's pretty axiomatic right there, what she says. Now, Judge Trimble did not even refer to the former president of the board. Her deposition, Ms. Joelle Williams, is not in his ruling or anything. And she testified about the fact that Ms. Hildebrand took over the meeting, that she made the motion to reopen. All the seven white members went along with her and without any discussion or anything. And the four blacks obviously voted against it. And they opened it up for 2 weeks. They went and recruited this superintendent over in Wynn Parish, and they appointed him. And he's recently retired, by the way. And my client had 13 years experience as assistant superintendent in Rapides Parish. It has 52 schools, 30-something thousand students. The one in Natchitoches, where he was a board member at one time and also had prior teaching experience there, had 12 schools and 6,600 members. He lives in Natchitoches Parish. He wanted an opportunity to get this appointment. I think it's obvious that Ms. Hildebrand and Mr. Rock have had some prior history, and she definitely didn't want him. She could have said—
Really? You're making concessions against your interest?
No, I'm saying— the problem she made, though, she turned it into a racial matter by saying that—
I mean, basically it wasn't, you're saying.
Beg pardon?
You're saying it was a personal matter that turned into a racial matter. Is that—
yes. Well, she used those terms, I mean, and what she said and what she said. And that, again, it would be a jury matter to decide if the reason that she was against Mr. Rock was because of personalities as opposed to the fact that he was raised. But the fact, she said it. We didn't make her say it. She said it, and she told the three board members, this community is not ready for a minority superintendent. Then she goes and reopens and goes out and recruits a highly qualified superintendent for the appointment.
So what you're acknowledging is, it seems to me you've said, he was better qualified than your client. And that clearly, as between the two of them, you have not and could not establish that he was obviously and superior to the candidate that was chosen.
We will stipulate
okay,
that.
And if you say that, you have to rest on the theory. It seems, at least in my point of view, of course, this is a racially discriminatory case because. The bid-in or the applicant period was reopened. And if it had not been reopened, my client would have won, but it was reopened and a better qualified candidate than my client was chosen. So, okay, you may respond now.
He would have been denied a fair chance to the position had the applicants not been open. But when they opened them, they brought in five new white applicants. They brought in, they opened it wide open. His saying that the reason they reopened it was racially motivated based on what Ms. Hildebrand's the statements attributed to her.
Okay, I understand.
And also the other board members, the depositions that we put in there. Now, Judge Trimble has said that the statements of the other board members were hearsay. Well, I've pointed out to the court that, the rule of evidence says that it's omissions of defendants are not hearsay, and there's statements against interest, and obviously statements that other board members said about her, they're all defendants, and they would not be hearsay. The other thing was, Judge, about in the reply brief that was filed by counsel, he attached some uncertified documents to that brief, and 2 days later, Judge Trimble rendered his 12-page opinion. I did not get an opportunity to file a leave to, it was a reply to ask a surreply or answer. I don't know if those documents played a part in Judge Trimble's decision, but this court has held, and I cited the cases, where it was reversible error for a court to not allow the other party to respond to new evidence that's put in by a reply brief.
What was the new evidence in the reply brief?
It was some kind of policies from the school board.
Did Judge Trimble rely on those? Do you know that?
Well, counsel just attached it to his brief, his reply brief, and it wasn't certified, verified, or anything else.
What was it? What was it that you say? What was the evidence?
The evidence was something about the policy of the school board.
Something about it. I mean, you're the lawyer in this case. You should read the briefs and the reply briefs. I assume you have. So tell me specifically what it was.
It says that one member of the board doesn't speak for the whole board. That's what it said. That's what the policy said.
Did Judge Trimble refer to those documents in his decision?
No, I said that. I said, I don't think that that was instrumental in Judge Trimble's decision, but, I didn't get a chance to respond to them at the time. I didn't know what Judge Trimble...
There's really no doubt that your client is qualified to be a superintendent.
That's right.
I mean, that's not an issue.
No.
Okay.
I'll save the rest of the time for rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Again, I apologize. Yes,
that's all right. I accept your apology. Mr. Noah?
May it please the court. Elmer Noah with the Hammonds and Sills law firm. We represent the Natchitoches Parish School Board in connection with this matter. Your Honor, the issues with regard to the establishment of a prima facie case, I think those are not actually in dispute. As has been pointed out, Mr. Rock was a member of a protected class. He was qualified. There was an adverse action. He didn't get the job. Dr. Duke, who's a white male, did get the job. That's not an issue in dispute.
But now his theory that he has acknowledged is that the discrimination occurred because the applicant list was reopened.
Yes, sir.
Now, why was it reopened? Why weren't you satisfied with the lists of the people on there? And why is that not racially discriminatory? I mean, was there any assurance that Mr. Rock would have gotten the job on those?
No, sir.
So that is speculation as well.
Excuse me.
No, well, at least you've taken the lesson. There's no evidence, or is there evidence, that he would have been selected but for the reopening of the application period?
No, sir, there's absolutely no evidence that his argument was that he stood a good chance of being it, but even in the appellant's brief.
Were there other qualified people among the mixed of the first group of applicants?
Yes, sir. There was testimony that among the first group of applicants, which I believe there were 6 black applicants and 3 white applicants in the first group, there was some testimony that there was some concern about whether some of the candidates possessed the adequate certification for the superintendency job and qualifications for the job. And so the motion was made to reopen to solicit additional applicants.
He says that this was driven by the board member who had made racial-related remarks to the extent that she said that the parish was not ready for a minority or a black person to be superintendent. What influence did she have with respect to that decision?
Well, she was the chairman of the search committee. There's no dispute about that. There was a motion made to reopen the application period. The board, again, she was not the sole decision maker. The board collectively voted to reopen the application period, at which time there were 7, I believe, additional applicants. There were a total of, I believe, 17 applicants altogether with the first group and the second group.
Now, what is the evidence that supports this, that the decision to reopen was determined by the influence of, what is the lady's name?
Ms. Hildebrand.
Ms. Hildebrand. What was the evidence of that? That the other school board members who voted to reopen were subject to her dictation or her
none.
No. Did any school board member testify? If she had said nothing, we would have kept it just like it was, but she was overpowering and so on.
No, sir.
Sir, I'd like to review several facts, some of which I'm sure you're going to dispute.
Yes, sir.
But I'd like you to let me know at the end of this listing if the record supports the fact that these were facts in front of the district court judge. The first fact is, that you mentioned before, that Ms. Hildebrand was the chair of the search committee, correct?
Yes, sir.
The second fact is the fact that she allegedly made racially discriminatory remarks to the extent that it's direct evidence or whatever that the community was not ready for a black superintendent. That may be disputed factually, but there is evidence in the record to support that was made. Third, that a white candidate was selected. Fourth, that Joella Wilson testified that the board previously had agreed it had enough qualified applicants.
That's disputed.
Okay, that's, I understand it's disputed, but it's a fact that is in the record before the district court judge. Her testimony to that effect. Okay.
Yes, sir.
That Joella Wilson said when the African American members asked why the application period was being reopened, that there was no reason given by anyone, including the white members of the board, and finally that in choosing Dr. Duke, the board relied on unmentioned job requirements.
No, sir.
Did not rely on the fact he had a doctorate, that he'd been a superintendent?
There were minimal job requirements that were posted and advertised for the superintendency. There were several other applicants, including several black applicants that had doctorate degrees. So the decision was that they felt he was the most qualified, but certainly a PhD was not a minimal requirement.
Are you talking about in the first wave of applicants?
Both.
There were several who had PhDs?
Yes, ma'am.
In the first wave?
Yes, ma'am.
My only point is this, and correct me if I'm wrong, that in the advertisement for this particular job, that there was no requirement that she be a PhD. They understand that they thought that was better because some thought it was better because he had that. But that was not a job requirement.
That's correct, Your Honor. There's no minimal requirement. In the state of Louisiana, there are minimal requirements for a certification for superintendency. There are minimal requirements. There were minimal advertisement requirements that were posted. Clearly, and that was one concern. I'll go back to that point. In the first group, all the applicants are screened, and there was testimony that there was some concern that some of the first group of applicants were not either certified properly or had the proper qualifications per the advertisement. And so that was one of the reasons, I understand, that was stated. But again, the decision was that Dr. Duke was the better qualified between himself and Mr. Rock.
So when you're looking at all these facts, some of which may be disputed, including Joella Wilson's testimony that the board previously agreed that it had enough qualified applicants, and the fact when the African American members or some of them asked why we were reopening this, that there was no response by the board. If the legal requirement is that for this cat's paw theory is that Ms. Hildebrand exhibited discriminatory animus, which may be represented by the statement, at least by the statement that was made, and that Ms. Hildebrand possessed leverage or exerted influence over the decision maker, why wouldn't that be applicable here?
Well, Your Honor, I would respond in this respect. There's no evidence that she was certainly not the primary decision maker. The board collectively, and counsel referred to that in his argument, in our reply to his opposition, that was brought up in his opposition that she did exert undue influence in as far as the decision maker. That's why we brought up in our reply this issue about the fact that she was not the sole decision maker, that the policies of the Natchitoches Parish School Board are the board is the collective decision maker. So that was in response to his argument. But there's no evidence at all, none, that she exerted any influence or attempted to exert leverage. She just made a statement in a private conversation that Mr. Ralph Wilson and Ms. Joella Wilson, who was the then president of the school board, who were both minority members, she said that she was concerned, Ms. Hildebrand said, I was concerned that the community of Natchitoches Parish may not be ready for a minority superintendent. So I think Judge Trimble felt that, you know, maybe that did or maybe that didn't evidence discriminatory animus, but even assuming it did, the other component of the test was there's no evidence that she attempted to exert any kind of influence on the other board members.
Well, when the white board members voted to go ahead and reopen the application process, okay, I mean, wasn't there some testimony, I remember somewhere, that Ms. Hildebrand really took charge of the meeting, and then, of course, when there was asked for an explanation, members didn't receive one?
She was not the president of the board. Ms. Joella Wilson was one of the minority members. She was president of the search. She was the chairman of the search committee. She offered the motion to extend the period of time to file additional applications. And as Judge Trimble pointed out in his opinion, the fact remains that after all these folks, all 16 or 17, there were one or two that dropped out along the way. The decision was made by the board. They voted again to interview all the applicants that were still left, including Mr. Rock and including the new group. They interviewed all of them, plus the fact that Mr. Rock was one of the five finalists. So there was no evidence that she attempted to do anything under the table or any kind of undue influence to prevent him from being considered by the Natchitoches Parish School Board for the position. It was Mr. Rock, it was Mr. Verrett, who was another black candidate, it was Dr. Duke. I believe one gentleman dropped out the very last day, and I forgot the name of the other one, but two of the three top candidates were African-American candidates that were considered for the position that made the five finalists after they were all interviewed. Yes, ma'am.
How many of the top five in the final group were also in the first group of candidates?
How many in the top five?
Just name me who, do you remember who are the top five? Obviously, it was Rock, Verrett, and Duke. So who were the others?
I'm sorry, one dropped out at the last minute. And
well, is it in
the my mind about the fourth one at this point. I don't remember.
But it's in the record as to the five that were finalists.
Dr. Verrett was in the second group. Mr. Rock was in the first group, Dr. Duke was in the second group, and the other person, I just lost my mind at this point. I don't recall.
Well, you said there were five finalists, right?
One of the gentlemen, if I remember correctly.
One of the finalists dropped out.
The day before they voted, I believe he withdrew his name, if I remember the record correctly.
Okay.
And I don't remember the fourth, and I apologize for that. I don't
remember. All right.
On the final vote, understand that am I correct that Dr. Duke received seven votes, all from the white board members?
Yes, sir.
Is that right?
That's correct.
And then there were four African American board members, and plaintiff received two votes.
Yes, sir.
And who was this third applicant who received two votes?
Shannon Verrett was an African American candidate, and he received the votes, I believe, from Mr. Graham and Mr. Matois.
It was strictly, the votes were strictly along racial lines for whatever reason.
Well, even among the black candidates, there was some disagreement as to between Mr. Rock and between Mr. Verrett, because Ralph Wilson and Joella Wilson voted for Mr. Rock, Mr. Graham and Mr. Matois voted for Dr. Verrett, who was the other black candidate. So, yes, sir, the vote technically was split along racial lines 7-4.
The whole thing is sort of ugly, isn't it?
Unfortunately. So, again, the issue, and not to be repetitive, but the issue is we would respectfully submit that there's just no evidence for this court to consider or for Judge Trimble to have considered that there was any effort or any undue influence on the part of Ms. Hildebrand. I think when you read the record and you consider the evidence as a whole, it's to the contrary. Ms. Hildebrand made the motion to reopen, but other than that, there's really nothing else in the record that she attempted to persuade or to do anything else other than express a statement that her concern was this community may not be ready for a minority superintendent. She didn't say, I'm not ready for one, or I plan to vote a different way or anything, but she said that in a private conversation. Yes.
Did she say that before or after the request for additional applicants?
Before. Your Honor, I'm not positive.
Did she say it after as well or just only before?
Well, the evidence is that, and I believe it was before the vote to reopen, Mr. Wilson and Ms. Wilson and Ms. Hildebrand were in a private conversation, I believe, in an office outside the boardroom, and they were having this discussion, and she allegedly made that statement to them in the private conversation. There was also... Was it
connected specifically with the time in off reopening the applications? In other words,
I don't think there's any evidence of that.
That's what I'm asking. Did the evidence show that she goes out and she makes that and they immediately take a vote?
I don't think there's any connection between the two. It's just she made that observation or that comment to them. Again, there is some testimony that there was some concern about the qualifications and the certifications of some of the original pool of applicants. And so the board collectively said we need to reopen for 2 more weeks and see what else is out there. And then at that point you had 3 additional African-Americans apply and 5 white, I believe. So there were 8 in the second pool, there were 9 in the first pool, all of whom were interviewed. So the board did vote to conduct interviews, and those were all conducted over 2 or 3 days in late May. So there's no testimony that there was anything done improperly or any kind of influence or leverage that Ms. Hildebrand tried to involve herself in with this search committee interview process. And there's certainly nothing to indicate that she made any kind of effort to influence any of the board members with regard to how they voted.
Okay, thank you very much. Mr. Broussard, you've saved 3 minutes for rebuttal.
On just a brief reply, I would point to Your Honors the depositions of Mr. Graham, a board member. The statements were made at a committee meeting prior to the meeting that they reopened. In fact, the meeting of April 9th was set to interview the applicants. And then Mr. Graham said he testified he voted against the motion to reopen because he didn't think it was fair to the other candidates that had been approved. He stated he heard Ms. Hildebrand say something about not wanting a minority superintendent. The community wasn't ready, but he testified, and this is a quote, "Who would you consider the leader of the board of 7 votes? At that time, Ms. Hildebrand, she took charge. He said the first group of candidates were going to be interviewed, and quote, she stopped it. The president told her she was out of order. He asked if they were going to interview the first group of candidates for reopening. It's in his deposition. That's what he testified to. Again, Ms. Wilson, who was the president of the board at the time, she wasn't even aware that they were going to change the interviews. They thought they were setting up the schedule for the interview in April 9th. And all of a sudden, Ms. Hildebrand makes this motion, and she says that we need some more applicants.
Do you know who was the other finalist that was not selected? whether that other...
Yeah, there was a, there was a, it was my client, it was Mr., Dr. Duke.
Barrett.
And I can find out in about 2 seconds if you want me to ask.
Well, that...
We'll find out.
I'll be glad to ask him.
But there was a fourth,
Well, one dropped out.
So there was a fourth person, and my question is whether that fourth person was in the first group of applicants or the second group of applicants.
I don't know, Your Honor.
All right, and my other question is, do we have the resumes of the first group of applicants in the record?
The, I think they ought to be in there.
Their applications?
I don't, I didn't put them in there, Your Honor.
Pardon?
I didn't put the resumes in.
Okay.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That completes the arguments before.